the Mug Meeting Summaries podcast. I'm Gilbert Detilieu. Our main meeting's main topic was ZFS, presented by Edwin Amsler.
Hello, everyone. This is my first time actually speaking up. Alright, so I don't really know the sort of distribution we have here between regular users, sysadmin, stuff like that. I think we're mostly at the sysadmin level. So what I'm going to do starting off here is sort of the easy benefits of why you'd want to use ZFS, and then I can geek out and get into like the really in-depth stuff about how it works. I've thoroughly digested the manuals on this. So, has anyone heard of ZFS? Okay, yeah, good. Excellent. Users? Mm-hmm. Regular users? Really?
No. Yeah. All right. Heard of.
Oh, man. Oh, man. You're in for a treat today. Yeah, so the basic idea, design idea with ZFS was to make file systems as easy as RAM. So, you know, when you basically are partitioning your disk, going, oh, my home needs to be this size, user needs to be this size, that sort of thing. They wanted to get rid of this. They wanted to basically think of file systems as processes of running. So, like, you don't have to, say, dedicate 3/4 of your first DIMM socket for Firefox. You don't have to do that. Why should you have to do that with your storage? It doesn't really make any sense. So the idea is you've got all of these devices, all of these block devices, hard drives, anything that's got read-write, so solid state, that sort of stuff, and it pools them together. It's just blocks. So this is the simple way of doing things. So Jeff Bonwick, Bill Moore. Jeff Bonwick is sort of a big kernel engineer at Sun, or used to be. I worked there for like 20 years. And he pretty much hated how the file system division was handling things, so he decided he was going to try and do something better. So, now, the nice thing of being sort of starting from scratch this late in the game is you can look at everything and figure out ways of designing the entire system to work. So, with traditional file systems, when you've got, you know, one large block device, you need to use something to, you know, a RAID controller or something to tie all those drives together into one large block device. The idea here was to put the, basically merge those two pieces, where the file system and the volume manager are one. And when you do that, you get huge performance, or huge design gains, and just works out much easier. So these are some options here. if anyone wants to go through all of these, are there any pieces that, you know, appeal to anyone? I'm definitely going to do snapshotting.
Yeah.
Snapshotting's awesome. It's great. Checksumming's built in. Can't really show that off. RAID we can do. The reason why snapshotting's got an asterisk, I have used snapshotting on a Lumos space. OpenSolaris forked off and made another sort of distribution called a Lumos, and other people based off that. Sort of like how Linux is not a distribution in and of itself. So on Solaris servers, I've never had issues with snapshotting. With FreeBSD, I've had serious corruption when rolling back from a snapshot, so I don't trust it. And I haven't tried it on Linux yet, but it's sort of interesting there. All right.
Cloud encryption, is that an option?
It is, but only in later editions. When Sun walked off the source code, that's one of the first things they put in there. So there's no encryption yet, not in the fully open source version. So it's really simple. So you've got the pools, global data store. So you make this large pool of blocks, and then you sort of break them up with file systems. So it's just sort of the administration starting point. So then once those are done, you make your pools, you put them into file systems. You have files. That's the extent of it. So that's what I want to go over today. So break out of this. We'll start my fancy VM. Now, the big issue with Solaris derivatives, if you've ever used them, is there aren't a heck of a lot of packages for them. This is basically custom built so that they can do some stuff. Now, if I've got stupid fingers today, I wrote some scripts in here. So, let's make some files. These will be my block devices. So, make file 1G, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7. Oops. Let's make them die. N, I believe? Yeah, cool. So we've got ourselves some block devices. Now we will make a pool. Pool storage. So Z pool, name of the pool, and then VDEVs. So VDEVs are kind of an interesting situation. They're, how you attach the block devices is you can either have them as... how to word this? VDEVs are what are actually data is actually stored on. You can either have just straight disks as being your VDEVs, or you can make RAID 5-esque or striped VDEVs. So I always like replication, because there's some really interesting benefits with replication. So said pool, we'll do 1, 2, 3. Or sorry. RAID Z is what I'm looking for. RAID Z. There we go. Boom. Create. Ah, interesting issues. So here's what we're going to do instead. Create disks. And all this is doing is cat create disks. You lay stupid fingers. Go. So make a bunch of files. Create pool. So said pool create. RAID Z3 is RAID 5 with dual parity, or double parity, so you can lose up to 2 disks, and it should be A-OK, or 3? 3.
3 and replace 2.
Yeah. So let's create... Okay, so let's run create pool. Doot. We'll fix that one. So it's done. So, status. So, here's my pool. And it shows, this is sort of the layout here. So, you can see RAID Z3, and those are the disks that make up that. So, we can do zip pool add. Oh, we'll do zip pool list. We've got how much storage I have here. So, 4.9G. We can add more to that by just saying zip pool add. Oh, sorry.
What did I name it?
Take. Add 8.9. Should give me a warning. Cat. Ah. You have to do the full, full path to it. There you go. So now it's warning me that I'm trying to create something that doesn't have full replication. And because the way it works is it'll stripe your data over every one of your VDEVs. So if you don't want the security of having redundancy, you could go ahead and add it. Or we'll just add tank here. It'll also warn on things that don't match, so it should warn again. PWD, but that I don't have to worry about. Oh, what do we have here?
Wrong spot.
Oh, thank you, thank you. Not bad. Alright, so, yeah, mismatched replication level. So, I just killed it off, that's painful. 6, PWD, 7, okay. So, then we just say, I don't care, add it anyway. You see how fast this is working. So said pool status. There we go. So we've got extra stuff in here. Now, whatever data I throw at this, it will stripe across them. It'll be super happy. If you don't care about replication, you can throw a whole bunch of disks in there and just have one giant stripe. It's very fast, but there's a really interesting benefit here. So all of the blocks that are stored inside one of these Z pools has not a checksum with it, but a checksum at its pointer. So every block of data that's stored in the device, when it reads it off the disk, it does a checksum in memory to make sure that it's right. And in this I/O system, if it detects that it's wrong, it will go and it'll say, oh, I've got a copy. The copy's over there. Read that copy. If the checksum is right, it will silently repair it and keep a history here. So checksum failure. It'll do read failure, write failure. If you get enough write failures or read failures, it'll automatically offline the disk. You can add hot spares in, so if it fails a disk, it'll automatically put one in and resilver it for you. You don't even have to touch the machine. It's friggin' awesome. It's just great. So what we'll do here, let's see what other tricks I decided to set up here. So we've got file systems. Set up this list. We'll do...
Where is the information about these pools? Where is that?
The information about the pools? On the disk itself. There's no config files, because it makes sense, right? Hardware that's got its own storage should know about how to configure itself.
Mm-hmm.
It just makes sense. So, also, more questions the better. Feel free to ask. So, by default, it'll make one file system and mount it at the bottom here. So we can easily make another one. So ZFS create tank Edwin. Okay. So we've made me. We can go into... Tank Edwin, make file, 10, 1 gig. All right, oops. And a name, file, there we go. Oops. Come on, yeah. Okay, so that's in there. Now, with these file systems, because there's no, like, there's no time taken to make one of these. You can make as many as you want, as fast as you want. That you pretty much, they encourage you to make as many as you can. And when you do, you get these really interesting properties. So if we do ZFS get all, I'll show you the different things you can do with these. Sort and less. Okay, so each, ooh, that did not work. Because our resolution is a too big. Zoom out, my friend. Aw. Anyway, RSN. Let's just do that instead. Okay, so this is on the R pool group, and here are properties that we can set. So the way you would enable compression is really simple. You can see that there's a compression property here, and it says it's off, and there's other properties here, checksum, copies. Copies is really interesting. The way they store their inode-esque bits in here is that they've got three pointers on every inode. And for particularly important file system stuff, like metadata, folders, very important stuff you never want to lose, they store multiple copies by default. So if one of your VDEVs goes down, it's stored somewhere else. It's got it. Now, user data by default has one copy. It doesn't make multiple copies. But if you want your data to be, again, replicated over even more devices, you can set copies to two on just one file system, and every file within that system would have it. So if we want to enable compression here, so we can do sort of a set compression equals on to tank Edwin. All right, so now compression is on. Whatever I write on here will now be compressed. So let's go all the way back.
What was on here before? Does it get compressed?
It does not go back in time. If you want to recompress the stuff on there, you have to move it off and move it back on. It's all
so the file system itself. Compression file bases or block
it's
bases?
Block bases. It's everything is a block, and that's where the snapshotting gets really, really important. So now if we make let's make a bunch of files, and instead of doing n, we will actually write it here. Now it's doing the compression in memory and then writing the blocks, so your IO throughput's actually much higher than if it would write it otherwise. This is a VM, so it's not all that speed. There's different compression algorithms, too. By default, it uses LZJB, which is some custom thing that's sort of like LZMA. You can specify gzip compression. So, if, for example, you're running this on FreeBSD, you can set the compression on your ports tree to gzip, and then it's exactly the same space as, you know, as it is as gzip files, but they're instantly accessible. So we've got these here. So we've got zip pool... status. So now, there's other things you can do too with this. So you can scrub at any time if you want to make sure you don't have any errors. So just to show that, tank, this is going to be important in a second. So it said pool status. Okay, so we've got no issues, scrub repair, because there's no data on the disk virtually. So let's add some, because it's compressed it all. So let's see what we can copy out of user. Just copy some crap. Yeah. Oh, no! Good call. Let's get some stuff. Okay, so...
So what do we have now? List. Okay, so we've got 28 megabytes on here. So now let's do something really stupid. Let's go home. Let's go to... Oh, I'm now root. CD. Let's see if we can kill some stuff off of here. Alright, so let's write some garbage. File equals random file equals 2 plus size equals 1 megabyte count equals 1. Everything look right to everyone so far? Oh no! Uh oh. Ain't that fun? Bah! So big. That's 2. Let's just write anything in there. Okay, cool. So now if we do zpool status, it doesn't know about the error yet because it hasn't tried to fetch the data. So, cha-cha. So let's see if we can make it find some. Okay, so corrupted data unavailable. So it's already found it. We have no issues. It's in the degraded state to know that you really should replace it. To replace that, it's easy. You go zpool.
So you actually basically took a magnet to a hard drive.
Yeah, I just destroyed a chunk of the drive.
Okay.
Interesting, too, the way they store the blocks. I mentioned that they try and store copies across multiple VDEVs. If you don't have multiple VDEVs, by default, they'll put one every 1/8 of the drive. So theoretically, you could have a giant, you know, corruption at the beginning of your drive. The rest of it will still be fine. Another thing I haven't touched on either is that it's a transactional file system, so it works much like a database. So it's never inconsistent, ever. Basically, it changes the data and it walks up. And at the very end, it does its, you know, one commit. If the commit fails, it's pretty much written it in free space and just drifts away. So you never have to FS check this thing. It just always works. So now we do Z.
Are you writing this on OpenSolaris? Are you?
It's the successor to OpenSolaris. Oracle closed the source and said, screw you guys. And they pretty much took it and they've... Illumos is the sort of the kernel and the extra tools like ZFS and stuff like that. And then,
but this version of ZFS, it's the same one that runs on Linux?
Yes. They're both feature compatible. There's some issues with the user space tools because some of them are written in Python and the APIs just aren't there yet. I tried using views, and there's things like setting quotas doesn't work yet because they haven't put the plumbing in. And there's certain things. So if you want the sort of the full benefit, unfortunately, you're stuck with this one. So we'll replace 2 with 3. And what do I have free? 8? 5.
5, 8, and 9.
Yeah! Got a character and pool name. Oh, it's because I haven't specified. Alright, let's get tricky here. Do-do-do-do-do. And... I know, right? Alright, zpool status. We're all good. So it's already gone through, found the stuff, fixed it, put the new drive in, resilvered everything. It's done. It'll do this. You don't have to take it offline. It just does this. It does this natively. So now let's get into snapshots, because snapshots are great. Primary.
It's working right now.
Sorry?
Is it spanning data? Can you pick up and drop 6 or 7 just as easily as you can in 1 through 5?
You can't take them out again. Because they had trouble doing something called block pointer rewriting. So once you add a device, you can never take it out. Because there may be data on there, and they never provisioned it to be able to remove in the beginning.
So you can't remove a device and move all the data back to, even if everybody's working.
Yep.
You can't say, I want to remove this device, I want to push all the data.
It'll always be degraded until you put another device of
okay.
The right amount of space in. It's just sort of the nature of it. There are certain things that you can add and remove. They've got... sort of a, they call it level 2.
I don't understand what you're saying there, because obviously the device goes corrupted.
Right.
And they fix it up. So why can't you just say, take it out? I don't get it.
Well, okay, so there's these inodes that are pointing to additional copies, right?
You just can't reduce the number of devices in a pool.
You can
replace one with another one.
Or you can deactivate it.
You can deactivate one.
Right.
But you can't say, okay, I want this pool to consist of one less device.
No, right. You can't do that.
Because okay. the way they work, okay.
You'd have to make a new pool and copy all the files over.
Pretty much.
Copy all files.
Because it's copy on write, right? So, like, the stuff that's been written will never be overwritten. What it does when it writes new data is it makes a copy, changes those bits in memory, puts it somewhere else, and then updates the pointers. That's what makes it always consistent. So there's also an issue when you run out of space because you can't do anything.
That was going to be my next question.
Yeah. So those.
What do we do now?
Yeah, those pointers are always there on disk. There's some interesting things, though, because it's transactional. They can do really smart stuff. When you write random data, because everything consists of transactions and it understands... what's being the underlying stuff that actually runs the bare metal understands the data that's going on it can reorganize stuff for you. So if you're doing a ton of random writes, it will actually see what you're doing, change the areas that it's going to write on disk, and instead of doing random writes all over the platters, it'll do a sequential write. So it's wicked fast when you're doing a lot of really random writes to this. So I've got my pool here. So now what you do is we'll just jump on back in there. Tank, Edwin. All right, so we've got these files in here. We can make a snapshot relatively easily. So ZFS, snapshot, tank, Edwin, at today. That's the usual thing. So you can make as many as you want. They're virtually free. I've done snapshots on 3 gigs of data, and it's taken 500K. Because it's actually cheaper to make snapshots than it is to not make snapshots. Because on a copy-on-write semantics, it has to clean up after itself. With a snapshot, it never has to clean up after itself. It just leaves those blocks there. And it says, oh, those blocks belong to this snapshot. It's friggin' amazing. So what I use this for is VMs. So I've got my VM image. I install the VM in there. It's a, vanilla. It's set up perfectly. I make a snapshot, so that's base. I do all the updates, that's updates. Then I do uninstall of all of the required software to run our company product, which is Deadline. Make a snapshot there. Then I install Deadline, a version of Deadline. Make a snapshot there. And what you can do is you can peel back the layers. So now we've got me today, and we can do at whatever you want. We'll just do some garbage. So ZFS lists. Type all by default. You can set it, but by default it won't show you all snapshots. And we'll do recursive from tank. There we go. Okay, so we've got all my snapshots. Now, snapshots are just bits on the disk that are never going to change. Because you've got these bits that we're never going to change, you can do good stuff like make clones. So we can say ZFS clone tank Edwin to tank Ryan. Oop. Oh, sorry. We have to do it on a snapshot. So, today.
Oh, because the
snapshot locks. Yeah, snapshots lock it in place. You can never change a snapshot. You can only delete them.
If you save a VM image to a snapshot, is there a utility somewhere that will change that back to a VM loadable image so you can...
Oh, they're just VMX files. They're just files on a file system.
So you can get at it.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. Okay.
Because I can see this being a great way to move it to a new machine.
Yeah, that too. So we'll do ZFS clone tank Edwin at today tank Brian. Okay, so now what it's doing is it's making a read-write copy of this, and it's taking no more bytes. You can see right here. So Brian is taking 1.3K. For doing that. So you can make as many of these as you want. So if you're a sysadmin and you're trying to provision for 500 users, and you want the users to have, the welcome to the company, here's information for you. You can make hundreds and hundreds of hundreds of copies for practically free. Nothing. No problems. Now there's another interesting feature here. So I can't demo this because I don't have anything to send it to. But there's a ZFS send command that works at the block level for sending bits of data. So if you needed to destroy that data set and make a new one, you can just as you make a snapshot and then you say send everything from the beginning of time to the snapshot, it will go through and it will send only those bytes. Then you can say make a new snapshot and only send the things that changed between that snapshot and this snapshot. So it's very close to, what do you call it, RDIF? Stuff like that? Yeah, like RDIF.
Incremental backup.
Exactly. And it'll actually write it on the destination. You have to mark it as read-only, because if there was any writes on the receiving end, it's going to go kablooey. But yeah, I mean, those are the huge things that I use it for.
And how do you revert the whole pool back to a snapshot?
Yeah, absolutely. Actually, that's how updates work. In Solaris, since Solaris 10... whenever you do a system update, so our pool is the root pool that everything's installed on, they do a snapshot automatically. So I can actually say ZFS list, blah, 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 blah. List, because I did an update. So see, upgrade, install, that stuff, so that's already done. So if you get to a state that doesn't work anymore, just roll back. That's good.
So how do you do that?
There's a special command, and I have not looked into it yet.
But basically, you just get rid of...
Yeah, basically. It has to create its what they call a boot environment, and then it boots into that, and you can just, in grub, it usually comes up for my Solaris 11 machine at home running on a Sun Ultra 40. Rubs Ultra 40. Grub comes up, and it says which one do you want to boot into, which BE, and you can make as many as you want. So if you're going to do something really stupid, you can just snapshot it and then roll back afterwards, and it's nothing changed.
We use that feature all the time at the university because when you set up that alternate, that second boot environment, you can apply all the OS patches to the second boot environment while the system's still running production. So I don't know if anybody here has ever patched an out-of-date or badly out-of-date Solaris system, but it can take hours, right, because of the way the old patching system worked. The cool thing about it is you can do that during the daytime, right? You get this new one, it makes a snapshot of your running system, keeps track of everything that's changing, start up this other boot environment, you apply the patches however long it takes, and then you book your outage for the amount of time it takes to do a reboot. And you put on the patch system, and just like he said, if it doesn't work, it's one command to switch back to the other boot environment. So it's another reboot to fall back.
But when you're applying,
it makes scheduling a dream.
Yes, that's sure. But when you're doing those updates on a snapshot, and what are you doing? You're creating another snapshot. Like you're creating two parallel images.
Your data is typically shared between the two boot environments, because you only boot one at a time, right? So you're not talking about a lot of data here. You're talking about the OS with patches, right? Is the only thing that's actually being written to, right?
Yep.
So in the new environment, it's not a snapshot anymore, right? It's its own, right? Later on, when we decide to do another patch run, we take the original boot environment, make it a not snapshot anymore, make it a snapshot of the current boot environment, and you flip back and forth. So your storage usage is only two OSs.
Yeah, right? I understand.
Yep.
At any good time, at any given time.
So it's a really controversial feature. I don't use it. It's not really recommended unless you've got gobs of RAM. It's deduplication. So I mentioned how everything on the system is checksummed, right? Well, if you've got a checksum, you've got a really easy way to see if there's another block on the disk that is exactly the same as what you're about to write. So let's say, for example, you have all of these legacy VM images you made, but they all ran through the same installer, all wrote blocks to exactly the same place in the VM DK file, all this stuff. You just copy them on there. And it'll be like, oh, I noticed these blocks are the same. I'm not going to bother. It's actually faster than writing them in the first place, because it just increments like a block pointer or a reference count. Let's see.
What if you get checksum?
Good point. Yeah, like birthday principle or whatever, where there's like tons of people.
How big's your checksum?
By default, it's 256. Here's the difference, though. Yeah, exactly. So they're like, no, that'll never happen. But just in case. These people were really smart, by the way. If you ever read into this stuff, they solved some amazing problems with this. There's an option to do a verify. So if I say ZFS, I haven't done this in a while because I don't use it, set dedupe equals on verify.
nearby on tank me. Ah! Me? Ah! So close! So close.
It's like the old deck writer.
Okay, so on off, verify. And oh, I see. So you can only do a verify on SHA 56, so.
If you put your screen back to 80 cons, you could do it.
That's, thank you. That's a really good idea. I was like, let's just stick it there.
No, you dragged it, right?
Sorry?
You
zoomed, stretched it out.
You stretched it out to more than 80 cons.
You can just force it by going to terminal and then whatever.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Just type resize at the command line.
Oh, interesting.
That might work.
Oh, yes. Good call. See, this is funny because, yeah, awesome. Resize. I've just learned something that is, this is amazing. This is like, this is the greatest thing I've ever seen. Thank you very much.
Even better than ZFS.
Oh, man. No candles.
Yeah.
All right, so let's change that.
No, still didn't do it. Maybe you're not really at 77. Just drag one column off the...
Ah!
Just make the screen slightly smaller. Okay. Like, not with that, just...
Yeah, exactly. I'm going to change the profile to actually be a smaller font. Is it too small?
Yeah,
it's
good.
Okay.
I can still read it.
That was a bit of glue.
I can read it.
Wow, you're right there.
That fixed it.
Oh, beautiful.
There we go.
Beautiful.
It's all about 80 columns.
Oh, right.
That's where you started out.
Still can't get rid of that, eh?
You can, but it depends on your terminal emulator and your shell. All
right. So that just solved that problem.
Yeah.
So it's fast because you can still look them up, but it makes for darn sure that they are not the same before it writes it to disk.
Does it waste a ton of space building a database of the?
That's
passes?
The memory issue. That's the memory issue. So it has to do with this quick lookup, right? And there's two places you can store it. If you've dedicated an SSD as a cache device for doing random read operations, it'll store on a cache device. If you've got gobs and gobs of RAM, it'll store it in the RAM. Their estimation was it requires... it's fairly good. It requires 2 gigs of RAM per terabyte, but in actual, it's more like about 5 gigs of RAM per terabyte. For a home user like me, who only has 4, I don't want to trust it. I do use it for... video game ROMs, because they sometimes do translation stuff. It works really well. Yeah, I don't know. Is anyone... We can go into some of the in-depth stuff. I just realized I sort of merged them together.
CPU time?
It depends. This is mostly a dedicated file system machine, so it never really bogs down because my network is the bottleneck. The checksums do take a fairly substantial amount. So if I'm copying like 100 megabytes a second, it's about 20% CPU on 2
duals.
Dual Opteron. Yeah. So it's using like 1 core for that, about. There's some other things you can do on here that make it really easy to share stuff. Set NFS equal, share. And la, 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 la. NFS equals read write on tank Edwin. So this goes into the kernel NFS daemon, and it just shares it for you. I've just made an NFS share with 1 command, 1 line. Pretty sweet.
Who's it shared with by default?
I don't know. to be honest,
everybody.
Yeah, I guess. There's
nobody would be
secure.
Yeah, secure. Nobody.
The parameters that share NFS takes are the standard export options. So you can say what machines you want it to be on. I don't know them by default because I'm mostly Windows, as you may have guessed.
You can do SMB the same way.
Yeah, absolutely. There's a problem with that, though. So SMB, and we have to do share name, so we'll call it with. Oh, there's other options I don't remember. The issue with this is because file systems are hierarchical, like folders, the way that it shares them out in Network Manager, or, you know, Network Neighborhood, is it will do parent name, child name, child name, child name, child name, like underscore child names for, like, you know, as far down as the file systems will go. Mm. So it's kind of an issue. It looks really awful. So I run Samba anyway. so I don't get a lot of this benefit.
Yeah, a while back I was fiddling with it, and I saw this, but then it says, oh, well, but there's these limitations you do this way, and if you run Samba, there's these limitations. It's like,
I know, I just installed Samba. It works fairly well.
Everything.
Another thing, too, is for people who are familiar with, man, I don't know how much you guys are, but for old versions of Solaris, they were kind of annoying about how they set up the environment, so it was really hard to approach, because they pretty much put all the new tools in something that wasn't... Wow. Something that wasn't your path. So when you'd, like, type top or the standard commands you're used to, you wouldn't find it. So you'd get, like, the PR stats and stuff like that. Yeah, so those are the primary stuff.
Show them the strangeness with df when you're running ZFS.
Sorry?
Show them the strangeness with the df command when you're running ZFS.
Oh, right. So
don't be surprised when you do a df on a system with ZFS on it.
So yeah,
as scary as it looks.
As they grow and as the compression stuff goes in there, the size of your disks change. So I actually wrote one of the first things I did at Prime Focus was I wrote a tool to keep track of how much space was being stored on their X4500s. And the math I was doing was basically, how big is it? How much is it taking up? What's the percentage? And it would just change. It would go all willy-nilly. And basically, I had to read the administrator guide to understand what the heck was going on.
So you notice how export home and export home Edwin are the same size?
That too.
Different mount points? ZFS always shows you the whole thing. When you look at DF, he's seeing the whole thing.
Ooh.
It's not an accurate representation of what's in use by those individual file systems that are mounted there. You have to use ZFS commands to find out actual usage.
Because that file sort of completely allocated.
As you said earlier, it's a pool, right? Either two of those file systems can grow to use all of that space that's available. But when one of them does it, it's not available to the other one anymore.
But you can set quotas, right?
But you can set quotas to control that. If you're dealing with, like, home directories or whatever, you can set quotas on a file system so they can only consume a percentage or a finite amount of that pool. And that's how, in the old days, we used to set the partition size for the home directory this big so that all the users could only have that much. That's how you do the ZFS is through quotas.
You can also do reservations, too. So if you want to make sure that at least 20 gigs is free for that one user, you just say reservation equals 20 gig or 20 G, and you're good to go. So, that's sort of the overview. Have I converted anyone? Is anyone interested in running this?
Yes.
Yeah?
Maybe.
I was before, actually.
Yeah, I told him. Well, it's like, LLVM, right?
Can you full disk encryption on ZFS?
Sorry?
Can you do full disk encryption on ZFS?
With actual Solaris, if you want to pay Oracle a lot of money, you can do it per file system. So blocks are stored in that because file systems are the logical administration point. So you can everything in a particular file system...
Don't you encrypt the pool?
No, you don't.
Oh.
Yeah, so you only pay for the stuff you want to encrypt. Also an interesting thing, because they sort of merged the volume controller and everything else together, they don't suffer from RAID 5 write hole. If anyone knows what that is if you're writing, say you've got, you know, a RAID 5 of, you know, four disks and one parity. I'm out of pattern anyway. What it has to do is it writes a disk, reads it off, calculates parity, and stores in the disk. Now, if you lose power between when it's reading and when it's writing that parity, it will just leave the old byte that was there. And you'll never know. The only time you'll know is when you go to reconstruct the pool, and it won't reconstruct. So with this, because it's doing it at the block level and transactionally, it can write, verify that it's there, and then the transaction is complete. So you're guaranteed, again, that it's always consistent. It always works. That's why
the
I use
whole
it.
Thing, so if you do few file moves, then the whole thing's done atomically?
Yep.
Each file either moves or doesn't move?
It'll have a rollback, though, probably.
I don't think it's per the command. Like I'm not sure. It likely writes part of it. But you can guarantee that it won't be, like, halfway editing the metadata, and the user data is not on disk yet.
Yeah, the file system will always be consistent.
Right.
That doesn't mean you can never lose data.
Yeah, you can, like, accidentally throw stuff away.
You know, the file copy might be incomplete, so in that sense, it's not atomic.
But you should have a copy in half, then, as opposed to half a copy.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. you shouldn't lose data then.
Yeah.
In that way, you'll have a.
Well, I mean, the way a move works is it makes a copy, deletes the old one, right? If I remember correctly.
That depends on your file system.
Okay. It's also another interesting
that
thing.
That does.
Okay.
Just it's stupid, but all that's safe. You know, back in the old days.
There is something really interesting, though, because it's theoretically all these blocks are stored between all the file systems. There's something really odd. If you copy or if you do a move from one file system to another one, it will do the full transfer over it, despite the fact that it is still stored on the same physical media.
Mm.
It will copy them over. It's important for quotas and stuff like that as well. But yeah.
We used the ZXN at the university last. I forget when it was. We had to move their entire mail store to a new storage device, and we were moving it from one ZFS device to another. And the ZFS, as he pointed out, it's very much like RSync, right? So we did a send, and it runs like a bat out of hell. If you've got a good link, right, between your devices, to SANs, whatever you're moving, it runs like crazy. We did that in the daytime, right? Okay, and then we used the differencing, right? When we actually went to do our outage, because this is an active mail system, it's being hammered on. And then when we went to do the actual activity off hours before everybody's going to have the mail system down, all we did was send the diff to the new store, right? And bingo, we export it, import it. It's on the other on the actual mail server. All we did was turn off the one. Store, right? Import this store, because that's how you get a pool that's floating around loose that nobody has. You import it, and it becomes available to your server then. So we had this on this other SAN. We imported it to replace the one we had just gotten rid of, but it's now on a whole different SAN, and it worked flawlessly.
And what kind of mail system?
This particular one was Cyrus IMAP Synmail. IMAP Data Store. It was the IMAP Data Store. Yeah, which is
huge.
Nasty. It's huge. And well, and you got to be very coherent with your files.
Consistent checks, though.
Okay.
Consistency checks are better than they are with like Exchange.
Oh yeah, well for sure. But you don't care. It didn't matter that we were under Cyrus in this case, because ZFS will take care of your data integrity and let you move it around really. The coolest thing I ever saw ZFS use for was Sun's virtual desktop infrastructure. He was talking about taking these snapshots of system images. They had a desktop deployment tool that basically used VirtualBox, right? You boot up a VirtualBox, you load your OS on there, Windows, whatever it is, you get this clean copy of it, and then you freeze it. And then every time the user logged on for a desktop, it made a clone, which is almost instantaneous because it's just a copy of the pointers, and it adds on some oh, and when you write, you get this space over here that belongs uniquely to you, right? The user within seconds is up running this OS, does whatever they want to do, and as long as they don't need persistent store, it's really cool, because as soon as they log off, you just release that copy, right? No overhead. So in a matter of seconds, you can bring up this desktop and throw it away, and you can do this thousands of times for thousands of users throughout the day. If they need persistent store, you can mount a piece of storage on that OS that is persistent and belongs to that user and gets reattached when they log in. So for it's like the creme de la creme of LTSP, only bigger, right? So you can, Sun did one of these at one of their demos. They had thousands of guests in this place, and they were firing up desktops for these guests during breaks, hundreds of them, in a whole bank of thin client terminals called Sunrays. They had a really cool data store behind it, too, that we wish we could afford, right?
Oh, yeah.
But that's the other thing. Sun is using all of its ZFS and almost all of its data store products now, because underneath the covers, it can tap into SSDs, it can tap into different storage speeds, it will optimize stuff for you at that level, and you don't care anymore, right? You never have to screw around with it. If somebody runs out of space, increase the quota on the file system. You know, it's like LDM for Linux was, right, or whatever. It just takes all the head
except
the
easier
file storage. Right?
Yeah,
except easier.
It's no file set.
It has a little steeper learning curve because it's way more comprehensive and more versatile than LDM is when it comes to data maintenance and storage maintenance and deploying in an enterprise arena. LVM is, or EVMS is getting there, but they ain't there yet. The other thing I want to mention is every ZFS has a, I forget what the number's called, but there's an implementation level, and it tells what features are available in this implementation of ZFS. If you look at FreeBSD, it will be a lower number than you see in Solaris, because the dedupe thing comes in with a higher number, right? So that's important, as if you're trying to tap into these features, you look at that level number where you're using ZFS. Don't plan on that feature being there if it's a later feature. Check that version number in the OS you're running and make sure that feature is there before you plan on using it. Yeah. Don't count on dedupe saving your buns when it comes to physical disk space. You may need a ton of physical disk space, even if your data is highly repetitive.
To be fair, though, all of the open source stuff is now at version 28, which included deduplication. The only things that we're missing are the encryption, some sort of faster... There's three features.
We started paying more attention because BSD just hired somebody because they're implementing one of the features of ZFS that's not included for the regular people out here who aren't privy to the energy of Oracle. Yeah. So they've hired some expert now to put that next level of ZFS support in that Oracle is closed off. It's BSD not available. I don't remember which feature it is.
No, which BSD.
It's probably free.
Free BSD.
Yeah.
No, and they're working on, because Oracle closed the source, there's Nexenta is a company that has a couple of ex-Sun employees. Basically, when Oracle took over, everyone just sort of flushed out. Some of the more talented guys are at Joyen right now. That's Brian Cantrell and Brendan Gregg. If you look up screaming, I think it's screaming or yelling in the server room. They show some really interesting stuff with Fishworks. But so the Nexenta guys are actually working on, instead of having the pool versions, they're going to have metadata enable bits. So you can have a tag. So if some guy's like, hey, I can do that better, they can actually sort of implement their own specially named property, and then you can import that. So they're doing they're diverging from Oracle in that Oracle sort of does this version thing, and it's like, we do it, you can, you know, mirror our feature set. What they're trying to do now is allow other people to expand it on their own and see who wins as far as best implementation.
So is ZFS available now on multi-distros?
Sorry?
Is ZFS available now on
multi-distros? It's available through Fuse. I had some really interesting problems with... I've run ZFS. It's really portable. I've run ZFS on Solaris 10, FreeBSD, Linux, Open Solaris... And there's some issues with the ARC, which is their adaptive replacement cache. It's what they use to store bits they've already read from the disk. And FreeBSD, they had a bug for a really long time. I hope it's fixed by now. But it would just exhaust kernel memory, and then the machine would lock up because it would do a kernel panic. So that wasn't usable. Fuse, I had serious issues with the userland daemon just dying. But at least in userland, it was smart enough to come back up again. So when the ARC got exhausted, it puked and killed itself, came back up. Data's, for the most part, okay. If there were files currently being written, of course, I'm only going to get a bit of it. But at least the data that's already there is safe. So, and like I say, I've had issues with snapshots failing. The best way I'm going to be doing this, and I can't do it right now with Solaris, so I'm actually going to port over and switch to Lumos, is I'm running on the bare metal, I'm running Solaris with ZFS or Lumos on bare metal, and then I'm running KQMU to run whatever distro I want on top of that. So I'll make my disk images and do it that way, because it's like, it's tons and tons of CPU power that I'm dedicating to pushing data through a gigabit connection. So at most a 2 gigabit connection, because it's got 2 Ethernet ports on it. So that's the way you get it. That's the ideal. There's a built-in feature within Solaris. It's much like FreeBSD jails. They're called zones. You can actually slice up the system into a bunch of little fake systems. If anyone's interested in me doing that for another topic, for doing virtualization and stuff, it's really well integrated with ZFS. You can actually do delegation. So the zone itself can't see anything up, but it gets its own file system, and the users of that system can actually interact with ZFS on their own level. It's really slick. Lumos stuff, the KQMU, or the, sorry, the KVM stuff. KVM runs specifically right now on, they implemented KVM on Lumos, on the Solaris kernel.
It right now only works on Intel because Intel's the one that sponsored them, but it'll be pretty slick. We're going to run it at the office and see what happens. Any other questions? Things I may have glossed over? Things we want to go more in-depth in?
Performance.
Excellent.
It's ridiculously fast.
Absolutely excellent.
The only one thing that we ran into, because some of the stuff you talked about with the art and some of the other stuff that's going on in the covers, if you are pounding the crap out of the ZFS system, full, never let it get more than 80% full. We have to stray from work. Because the stuff that's going on in the background requires space, and if it doesn't get enough space, optimization starts grinding to a halt. And you're getting a lot of features here. When you have a lot of snapshots and layers and people are hitting right my storage only, so you got all these block accountings to keep track of. If you don't give it what it wants, it starts slowing down work.
Yeah.
But the overall performance of modern disks, especially if you throw in the SSDs and what it can get a hold of, I haven't seen anything be extremely fast.
It was more I wanted Edmund to mention what we did up front.
Did you like it?
Refresh?
We worked on that.
I know. I forgot.
What the... Sean wrote a white paper, like Sean Cody, I'm asking about it, wrote a white paper.
Oh, right.
Saturated 10 gig network off of three SSDs using ZFS. They were backed by Pure Metal, so they were NFS, or they were actually Samba shares. And they were able to rewrite massive amounts of data because we had three solid state drives acting as a cache.
Yeah. I mean, if it's in RAM, like if it's in the ARC, if you've got like 16 gigs behind this thing, it'll copy as fast as memory will go. I mean, I've copied like, well, I've copied about.
When we did that ZFSN, was the first time.
InfiniBand?
No. Oh, yeah, actually. No, it wasn't InfiniBand. But we had never seen our normal usage. We had never seen that kind of load presented to those brocade switches and what was going on there. Mm-hmm. And it was the first time we banged the SAN itself really good and hard. Right? We sized our SANs for backups, right? And that's always the crunch of the backup. So it's sized for that. We never had anything we could do besides run parallel backups that would actually make this thing sweat, right? And ZFS SIN would do it. It's very highly optimized file system.
It's great. I will, basically, it's the only thing I run for a file server now.
The best thing that ever happened to me is hilarious. And now it's available in BSD.
Have you ever had an issue with the ARC becoming exhausted in FreeBSD?
I've never used it in FreeBSD. Okay. One of the reasons I don't use FreeBSD is because it hasn't had good enterprise-level file system stuff before. Yeah, it's a nightmare.
There are some downsides to running Solaris because it's such a, I guess, obscure operating system. The only thing you'll find that'll really support it well is official Sun hardware. So I'm gonna have to buy that Ultra 40. It's like lock in.
Right,
I know. It's gonna be Space Heater. One's a VM server right now. But I had such issues trying to find network cards that would work. I switched between three or four motherboards, like Yukon, Marvell. I think the one I finally got working was I got a gig. Intel is well supported. Intel and Sun go way back. So that's, if you've got Intel network cards, you're okay. But hardware support is really the issue. So if you want to run like Vuce or something, you're probably better off there.
Can you use a term you struggle with instead of as ARC? What are you talking about?
The ARC is their cache. It's an adaptive replacement cache. It has to do, it works a lot like level 2 cache on the CPU. Because the guys who designed this are pretty much kernel guys. They know virtual memory. They know this stuff. So they pretty much applied all that stuff to here. So it's basically just a file cache. So whatever they read out, they store in there.
It's all in memory. It's all in RAM.
It's all in RAM. So as long as you've got the extra stuff, it'll just occupy the rest of it with cache. There's some interesting stuff. So because it does everything in transactions... There can be, it's rare, but there can be cases where the disks can't keep up. And you can actually put an SSD in there to cache up your transactions so that if you Basically, what it has to wait for is to make sure the transaction is going to be logically rolled out, and then it rolls it out. So it can actually use the SSD to keep that information there. So if your power dies, it can continue sort of like a journal, but not quite. I'm trying to think what else, other features we didn't touch on. No, that's about it. It's pretty solid. It runs all the time, no issue for me, at least on Solaris kernels. And like I say, I've had mixed results on FreeBSD and Linux, specifically Ubuntu, but it's just a Fuse framework, so.
Have you used it for the root file system on Linux or FreeBSD?
Almost. I had the kernel on a 32 megabyte compact flash card, and then everything else. So, yes, I guess. Everything but slash root itself, or boot. So it can be done. It's weird. They don't recommend that your files, your boot system and your storage, like your bulk storage, be on the same pool. So they usually recommend you have like one drive or two drives set aside for your boot and then everything else for your other storage. Because you can do that. It's basically ZFS space export space pool name, and it will detach, and you just pull all the disks out of your machine and you put them in another machine. You say ZFS import. It automatically sees the disks are there, and it just puts it right in there and mounts it where it was last time. Mm-hmm. It's great for thumb drives because it's done. Like, I don't have to type anything other than import pool name. It gets interesting when you've got multiple pools because you have to actually look up the hashes to figure out which one is which. But, no, it's really quick. Another thing, too, as far as porting between systems, they've dealt with endianness. So if you pull your disks out of a Spark machine and you put them into an x86 machine, it'll do it. And the really amazing thing, or the kicker, would be that neither person who is using it in their system is paying a penalty. The only time it does conversion is when it reads it into memory. So as it's writing it, yeah, it's like they put so... Dig into this. Read the documentation, watch the videos. These people are really, really smart at what they do. Everything that they've done is just... I was up until 3 in the morning the past, like, 2 days just reading up on this stuff. Reading the source code is also a really easy read if you know C. It's all open. You can add or change however you want. That's the beauty of it. But, no, it's amazing. It's the greatest thing ever. Until I figure out how to use dtrace, and then dtrace will be the greatest thing ever. So...
He really, really wanted to give this lecture.
I love this thing. I praise this to everybody.
I came here just to hear him brag about it.
It's great. It's
a convert. Yeah. Oh, yeah. It took some time to convert, to get my head around it, right? Because it's radically different from traditional Unix file systems and the way of managing Unix systems, right? It took me a while to get my head around it and start to trust it.
Yeah.
But it won't let you down.
The thing that converted me... is everyone knows about these Western Digital green drives, right?
Yeah.
So these green drives, some of them aren't perfect when they come out of the factory. So I bought a couple of these Western Digital green drives and I threw them in. And then it would just say, checksum error on one drive. I was like, well, that's weird. It says, yeah, so I've accumulated 300 checksum errors. I fixed them for you, but you had 300 there. And I'm like, oh, okay. And then it settled down. So you basically say, clear your history of what you have. Then it said, the other drive, oh, you know, I'm losing bits, I'm losing stuff, checksums are failing here, but I fixed it for you. Eventually it settled out. Now, here's the interesting thing. If you go on Newegg and you read the reviews, it's like, it corrupted my data. You know, I'm watching the videos I saved, they're broken. Like, and you don't know. You don't know until you read the data off again. But this knows, and it can fix it for you. Eventually they settled. So I don't think I have corruption issues anymore. I've since ported those into Windows, and I've upgraded the storage space in mine, because it's really easy to do an upgrade too. If you buy the same number of disks as you have, you replace one, you do a resilver. You replace the second one, you do a resilver. You replace the third one. Once you're done all of them, you're up to the new storage.
But you know, if it finds a block that checks some error, does it rewrite it to another block, or does it put it back in the same block?
It's copy on write, so it's going to make a new copy somewhere else, and it's going to unlink the copy that was wrong.
Do you think it marks that block as being bad?
No, they were considered doing a purposeful leak, So basically, would mark it bad and would never allocate it again. I don't think they implemented it. I mean, there's not a whole lot of documentation on that. I haven't read all the source code yet. There's a lot of it. But the way they designed it from the top down, it's really, everything fits well. It's very cohesive. Everything makes a lot of sense.
But if it keeps happening, right, just like any other, you're going to start seeing what it's going to be very poor performance, right? So at some level of even software, where you hit a hard error, you start going, I think it's kind of a
toss it right.
Yeah, toss it out. Yep.
That's what I did.
But never have you lost data. That's what the cool bit of this is. All through that process, even right up to a hard failure, you're never losing data.
Yep. Saved myself.
All right. Thank you, Evan.
That's it for this podcast. Thanks for listening. For more Mug Meetings summaries or for more information about the Manitoba Unix User Group, check out our website at muug.mb.ca.